Thank you. Yeah, I don't know why it just came to my mind. All right. So this chapter, this is our third, and this will be the last class on this particular chapter. We're going through it. It's huge, over 200 verses. So we're, instead of going verse by verse, we'll continue just to choose the selected verses that unfold the story. And specifically, I'm skipping over a lot of the descriptive passages. And today, again, we have huge descriptive passages. I'll summarize them for you. But to go through each and every verse is just lots and lots of very lovely poetic descriptions, but I'm not sure in a class like this if it makes much sense to go into that much detail, unless we want to spend the next several years going through the text, which is what it would take. It's, remember, the text is, what did I say? I think 1,200 verses altogether? Yeah, 1,200 verses, so that's... It took us 5 years of weekly classes to go through the Bhagavad Gita. That's only 700 verses. Okay, let's pick up the thread for tonight. So in, what do we have to do? What do they do in the soap operas? You get the recap. This is almost like a soap opera. This is a very wonderful story. And so I will summarize the story thus far for you. This chapter opens with Arjuna speaking to Sri Krishna and says, Oh Krishna, I would really like to see you as you truly are and experience you as you truly are and experience your own abode, Nitya Vrindavana. This is Arjuna's request. And Sri Krishna, you remember, gave a very unexpected answer. He says, well, I can't exactly help you, but I can tell you where to go for guidance. So Sri Krishna says, go and worship Goddess Parvati, Katyayani Devi. And then Sri Krishna apparently gave Arjuna all instructions on how to worship Devi. And so Arjuna goes on worshiping Devi, and in his worship and meditation, he receives Devi's darshan. And Arjuna says, I want this experience of Sri Krishna. And she says, if that's what you want, then do these. Then you have to do some more rituals. He gives him some more rituals and says, you should go to a particular lake and bathe in that lake. And Devi apparently has a servant. Vayasya was a term used in our text, and Devi commands Arjuna to go with her servant to go to this particular lake and bathe. And then Arjuna goes to that lake and bathes, and as we saw before, disappears forever, not forever, disappears in the water. Of course, shortly thereafter, what emerges from the water is this beautiful young woman, Arjuna. And Arjuna then is given further instructions from Devi through this Akashvani. So Devi speaks to Arjuna, and who, if you remember, she forgot her former form. She no longer thinks of herself as Arjuna. She doesn't see herself as Arjuna in a female body. She thinks she's just a woman. She doesn't even know where she came from. She's very confused. But she hears Devi's voice from the sky, and Devi's voice instructs her to go and bathe in another lake, which she does. And at that lake, she also sees a number of gopis, sakis, in fact, a great number of them. And after bathing, she feels a little bit modest and a little shy, I guess is the word. But she goes and starts talking to these gopis. The one of the gopis is named Priyamuda, who then gives Arjuna more instructions on doing more rituals. And remember in our last class, we skipped over, what do we count? Over 100 names of the gopis. They're all named. So we skipped over all of that. And then Priyamuda takes Arjuna to another lake for more bathing and gives her instructions for more for more puja, but there was something surprising we saw at the end of the last class. When Priyamuda gave instruction to Arjuna, Arjuna was not instructed to meditate and worship on Sri Krishna, but Arjuna instead was told to meditate on Radha and puja, etc., worship to Radha. And as a result of Arjuna's tapasya and prayer and worship and meditation, he's blessed finally with darshan of Radha. Now, we'll pick up that this is pretty much where we came. So Radha appears to Arjuna, and Arjuna is just overwhelmed with you know, feel love and devotion, and falls at Radha's feet, and that's where we left off at the end of our last class. Now, before we pick up the thread today, notice when we look over this whole text, it's step after step after step after step. You know, first Arjuna goes to Krishna, then and gets some instructions. Then Arjuna goes to Goddess Parvati, gets more instructions. And then it's Devi's assistant, if we can call her assistant. Do gods and goddesses have assistants? Executive assistant? something like, this is a busy world, you know, they got a lot to do, so they must have assistants. So anyway, so Arjuna gets further instruction then from Goddess's servant, we should call her. And then Arjuna gets further instruction again from Devi in the form of Akashvani, and then more instructions from Priyamuda, one of the gopis. And now she meets Radha, and she's going to get more instructions from Radha for the sake of how to finally have that experience of Sri Krishna. Many steps in which Arjuna has received guidance from many individuals at various points in this journey. And there's some very significant symbolism in that. Arjuna's journey of transformation definitely represents our lives, and to consider our life, your life, to be a journey of transformation is perfect. This is what spirituality is about, a journey of transformation. If sadhana means just doing prayers and pujas and attending these boring lectures like this one again and again, and if it means just doing that over and over again and nothing changes, you're wasting your time. We said two classes ago, and it was kind of not harsh words, but strong language. I said, if your sadhana is the same as it was 5 years ago, you're doing something wrong. You're stuck. So in this lifelong journey of transformation, we expect changes. There must be changes. Notice Arjuna went from one person to another. So we could say this in many ways. Don't think that in life you find one guru and that's it. Sometimes you find that one, but generally we have several or many, or many or maybe several leading up to one. I guess my experience, like many experience, I was blessed to meet many different spiritual teachers. Actually in California in the 1970s, when it was all a brand new thing in this country, and in India, of course, later. But when I came to meet Pooja Swami Dayananda, I know that I found my guru. But you don't start there. There were steps leading up to that. And even after meeting him in 1981, even then, there were so many steps and changes in my life. And that's a good model for anyone's life, spiritual life. Many phases, many changes of direction. Don't think of it as being so linear. Just do this, then do that, then do that. Arjuna is being sent all over the place. Go to this lake, then go to that lake, then go to the east lake, then go to the north lake. He's being sent all over the place, and by a variety of people giving guidance. In spiritual life, we have to be ready for that. ready to pursue the goal wherever it leads us. And often we don't know in advance. Do you know the goal? Do you have a clear idea of the goal that we seek to fulfill in spiritual life? Generally, if you're honest, the answer is no. Now, long ago, we talked about this in the Bhagavad Gita class. This is a very peculiar situation. Can you imagine getting into your car and driving without knowing the destination? Would you do that? Not generally. I mean, sometimes you take a joyride, but generally you have a pretty good idea of where you're going when you get in the car. But here, we all undertake our spiritual journeys having a pretty vague idea about where we're going. This is a reality of the situation. And perhaps that's why we have to be ready for so many changes of direction. We discover we're going, a little bit off in this direction. Maybe I have to go more in that direction. And, you know, sometimes you're going down the road. This happens. If you don't know where you're going down the road and you get to the sign dead end. That happens in spiritual life too. And it's inevitable. It will happen since we don't have a very clear idea of the whole route. We know a little bit of it. And that's why along the route we meet so many people who give us guidance, who say, that's a dead end. Go this way instead. What a perfect model for spiritual life. So Arjuna's transformation, and it's a very gradual step-by-step and very complicated. It's not very straightforward. Do this, do that, go to this lake, bathe in that lake, do these pujas, do pujas first to Devi, then do pujas to Krishna, then do pujas to Radha. Now he's going to come do more pujas to Krishna. One thing after another. It's a good model. Be ready for changes in spiritual life. And just to end on that note, if your sadhana is the same today as it was 5 years ago, there's something wrong. There's no change. There's no growth, no development, and that's what we want to see. Like in if a musician is still performing the same pieces today that they were 5 years ago, and no new pieces in 5 years, what's going on? So there's no advance, no development. It's the same in spiritual life and in many other aspects of life, but in particular in spiritual life. So we've reflected now on Arjuna's very complicated journey or process of transformation. And with today's class, we'll see the last parts of that transformation and the fulfillment of his dream. And we'll pick up the thread in verse 147. You should be on the top there. If it's the same slide I had queued up.
49.
No. We want
144.
Okay. Right. We're going to skip ahead a couple and start today on 147. So at this point. At this point, Radha has Priyamuda has given Arjuna all the instructions on performing these pujas, and as a result of this puja and worship of Radha, Radha has appeared before Arjuna, and Priyamuda is also there. Radha now addresses Priyamuda and gives Priyamuda more instructions on how to guide Arjuna. And that's where we pick up the thread in 149. Tata priyavadam devim samuvhacha sakimimam. So then, Radha, uvacha, she speaks sakimimam to this sakhi. Which sakhi? Priyavadam devim. So Radha addresses Priyavada and says, Panau grahitva matsange samashvasya samanaya. Panau grahitva. she instructs Priyamuda to take this one by her two hands. This one is Arjuni. Lead Arjuni by her two hands. Where? Mat Sange, to my assembly. Radha is speaking. Lead her to my assembly. Samashwasya, reassuring her, taking care of her. Samanaya, lead her. Lead her there to my assembly. And we'll skip ahead now to 149. Gatvotarasarastire snapayatvavidhanataha. So Priyamuda is now guiding Arjuni through further further steps. And those further steps are Gatva, having gone to Uttara Saras Tire, having gone to the shore of a lake to the north. So far we've gone to several lakes to the east, and I think one's to the west. Now we're going to a lake to the north. And guess what? Another bath. Snapayatva. So Priyamuda makes Arjuni bathe in that lake, Vidhanataha, according to scriptural rules. Sankalpadika purvam tu pujayatva yathavidhi. And then Arjuni is made to do puja, beginning with sankalpa, the traditional steps of puja. Puja yatva yathavidhi, having doing this puja according to scriptural rules. Now, puja of whom? Previously, Arjuni was instructed to worship Radha, and as a result of that, he receives Radha, and Radha is giving instruction either personally or through Priyamuda. But now, the instruction is puja yatva, having worshipped whom? Shri Gokula Kalanata Mantram Tachasu Siddhidham. Whose worship is Shri Gokula Gokula Kalanata, the Lord of the loving arts of Gokul, the Lord of love. Again, Kala here means the art of love. So the Shri Krishna. And she is also given, she Arjuni is also given a mantra which is Susiddhidham, which will definitely bless her. And I'm just looking ahead, we're going to start skipping over lots of verses now, or we're not going to finish this text. This mantra and the pujas are said to come from a Mohana Shastra. This apparently is a reference to one of the many Tantrika texts, which no one has probably lost. Mohana Tantra. There's several references to a Mohana Tantra text here, giving mantras and giving instructions for rituals. Now, we're going to skip way ahead to 155. Shri Radhika Uvacha Asya Yavat Bhavet Purnam Purascharanam Uttamam Tavadhi Palayainantvam Savadhana Sahalibihi. Radha is giving instructions still to Priyamuda. So Priyamuda is now acting as Radha's servant and helping Arjuni in this final process of transformation. So Radha here instructs Priyamuda, Asya, this one, referring to Arjuni, Yavad Bhavet Purnam Purascharanam Uttamam. And Yavat, as long as she is performing her Purush Charanam of the mantra. So she was given a mantra before, that Siddhidam mantra we saw in a few verses back. So having been given that mantra, Arjuna is supposed to do Purushcharana of that mantra. Purushcharana is a vrata to recite a mantra a specific number of times. And the number of, it's interesting how to calculate the number of times. Purushcharana means to recite a mantra for a lot of times. How many times? Depends on the mantra. And the rule is, for each syllable of the mantra, you recite it 1 lakh times. So if it's a short mantra, it's only several hundred thousand times. And if it's a long mantra, think of like Gayatri mantra, 24 syllables. So it would take a long time. So Arjuna is engaged in doing Purushcharana, and Radha instructs Priyamuda. She says, as long as she is continuing with her Purushcharana of this mantra, Tavati, until then, Palaya Enam, protect this one, take care of this one, Savadhana, Sahib. Sahalalibhi. Take care of, you know, if you're doing this Purushcharana as a full-time job. So Arjuna needs to be cared for, receive food, water, and care while she's doing this Purushcharana. And then what proceeds is a ritual more complicated than anything else described here. We'll just see the very beginning of it. In one second half of 157. Atra priyam vadhadeshat padmam hashtadalam shubham gorochanabhir nirmaya kunkam henapi chandanaihi. These are the beginning steps of a really complicated tantrika puja. Now, when I say tantrika, it doesn't have any bad meaning. It simply means the really complicated rituals which use lots of symbolism. It's a ritual done not as a simple form of worship, but rituals done in ways that attempt to harness a fundamental power or shakti. That is, the proper performance of the ritual is supposed to have its own shakti, its own power, its own capacity to cause something to happen. This is what tantra simply means, the science of rituals, the shastra, the rituals. And this is just the very beginning of the ritual where Priyamvada Adeshat. So Priyamvada gives instructions to Arjuna, and according to those instructions, she begins by creating a yantra on the ground, a geometric form, which is Ashtadalam Padmam, an eight-petaled lotus on the ground, and made of Gorochanabhi Nirmaya. They spread the cow dung on the ground first, and then on top of the cow dung, then they make the yantra with kumkum and other chandana and other materials on top of the cow. The cow dung is spread out and left, it's paste, spread out and left to harden, and then on top of that, then you make the yantra, and then on top of the yantra, then you have the, you establish the kalasha, and there are rituals for the kalasha, there are rituals for the, it's complicated. And the complicated rituals are described in some detail. We'll skip over that. And of course, all of this is now a complicated, powerful puja to Sri Krishna. So Arjuna is yet to receive what she's working for. This whole process of transformation is for the sake of experience of Sri Krishna, which has yet to take place. So let's see. Verse 192. Sutva pranamya vidhivat chetasa smaranam yaya. This is at the very conclusion. So Arjuna has already finished her purushcharana, which could take months or years, I suppose, and then has just concluded this really complex puja, which has been described in the last, looks like about half a dozen verses. And now, stutva, having praised Sri Krishna, pranamya, and having bowed, which is what you do at the very end. Namaskara is one of the final steps of puja, vidhivat, according to scriptural rules. Chetasa smaranam yayau, and leading her mind in deep meditation on Sri Krishna. Tato bhakti vasho devo yashoda nandana prabhu. Ah, who is that? I'm sorry? Is this not verse? I'm sorry. I gave you the wrong number. That looks like 162. My mistake. Sorry. That's why. No, you didn't see that. Yeah. So 162 is stutva pranamya. So Arjuna, having finished her puja of Sri Krishna, tataha, then finally darshan. And tataha is what introduces a darshan. So look how we've spent all this time on this text. Although what's a little bit peculiar is, how did the text begin? Arjuna was speaking to whom? And now here he is it was right there. And now he's finally come to the end of the chapter. And now he's transformed as Arjuna, but he's going to have the experience of Sri Krishna in an utterly different way. So all of this, it's odd that the transformation in one sense takes you back to where you began, but in another sense, it's totally different, as you'll see. So tataha, then, thereafter, bhakti vashaha deva, yashodananda prabhu. So the Lord, who is Yashodananda, the son of the one beloved by Yashoda, Sri Krishna, who is Deva, who is a god, who is Bhakti Vasha, who is compelled by our devotion. So compelled by devotion, Sri Krishna, and compelled is a word. The intensity of Arjuna's worship compels Sri Krishna to grant her desire. And then, in verse 163, second half, Uvacha Radhikam Devim Tamha Nayahiha Shuchi Shucha Ashucha. So then, Sri Krishna Uvacha speaks. Notice how in text you don't always get the Devi Uvacha, Radhika Uvacha. Most of the time you don't get it. It's right in the text. You really have to read very carefully, otherwise you lose track of who's talking. So here, Uvacha, he says. Who says? Sri Krishna addresses Radha. Uvacha Radhikam Devim. And what does he say to Radha? Tam Anaya. Lead her. So she's still one more step. Lead her. Take her. Take Arjuna. Iha, here. Bring her here. Ashu, now, quickly. Bring her here to me. Is the sense. So in that way, Sri Krishna summons Arjuna. And here we go. This is 165. Shri Krishnasya purastatsa samhetya prema vihvala. Shri Krishnasya purastatsa. Sa, she, Arjuna, was then purastat, right in front. Shri Krishnasya, of Shri Krishna. And what happened to her then? Sametya, prema vihvala, she was overcome by the intensity of her love. Overcome, filled, sametya, utterly filled with the intensity of her love, and then prapata kancha nibhumau pashyanti sarvam adbhutam. Pashyanti sarvam adbhutam, seeing such an amazing sight of Sri Krishna right in front of her. What happened? Prapata. She fell, bhumau, to the ground. Kanchani, interesting expression, the golden one. So Arjuni is referred to here as the golden complexioned one, falls to the ground. And now, here's something to reflect. This is the high point of the text. Well, the second to last high point of the text. You see the high point coming in a little bit. Now, how will the poet convey the intensity of Arjuna's experience? Look what she has gone through to achieve this. How many steps, how many different directions her journey has taken her. Bathe in this lake, do this, do that. How many elaborate pujas and purushcharanav mantras. And, you know, if we were to look at what it would take to accomplish all of it, it could be years and years and years of sadhana. It would appear so. And now, when Arjuna's dream is finally fulfilled, now the poet has to convey that to us. How will the poet do it? And the answer is extremely elaborately. What follows are some of the most elaborate descriptions in this entire text. Most of you remember the first two chapters we saw were all elaborate descriptions. These are more elaborate. And this is what we're going to skip over. So the first is the elaborate description of where Sri Krishna is. And then after that is an elaborate description of Sri Krishna himself. And we'll just see the very beginning of each. So first Arjuna falls to the ground, and then in the next verse, Kritshrat Katanchit Uttaya. It says, the sounds like getting out of bed in the morning when you're really tired and stiff. Kritshrat. It's very painful to move. But Katanchit Uttaya, somehow getting up from the ground. Arjuni Unmilya Lochane, opening her eyes. Then she gets to see. And what does she begin to see? So Sri Krishna is standing in front of her, but in poetry, you build up to the peak. So in poetry, the poet begins by describing Sri Krishna's surroundings first, and then arriving at Arjuna's experience of Sri Krishna himself. Just the very beginning of the surroundings in verse 167. Tadarsha pratamam tatra stalam chitram manoramam. Tadarsha, she saw pratamam at first, tatra there, stalam in that place. She saw what? Manoramam chitram, the most amazing sight. A picture of glory and wonder, and then begins to describe, and I'm just going to just scan through this and give you a few things. So there's a Kalpataru tree, beautiful tree. At the foot of the tree is a mandir, some kind of palace or home or place. And in that palace or home, there is another golden asana. We saw in chapter 2, I think, number of golden asanas. And all of this is described in great, great detail for about a dozen verses. We can skip over that, I hope. And so the surroundings are described first, and then we come to Arjuna. Of course, Arjuna is, you know, probably a maze, but she's looking mostly at Sri Krishna. But the artistic style is you have to build up to the peak. So the artistic style is you start with the surroundings and then arrive at the peak, which is Sri Krishna. And that begins in 176, verse 176. So this is where we see the beginning of the description of Sri Krishna. Susnigdha nila kutila kashaya vasi kuntalam maramatta mayuradya shikhanda baddha chudakam. The description and the poetic style is so typical. Head to toe. We have that expression in English too, I guess. The description goes from head to toe, and every little bit of Sri Krishna is described, head to toe, in great detail. So what is the topmost part? Not head. Above the head comes mukut, but above the mukut comes the peacock feather. This is where the description starts. And actually, though, a little bit all over. So first of all, there's susnigdha nila kutila. There's this very rich, dark hair. And this dark hair is kashaya vasi kuntalam. The curls of hair are perfumed. Perfumed curls of hair, thick hair. And on top of that is what? Mada matta mayuradya shikhanda baddha chudakam. There is a peacock feather on the top of his crown. But the peacock feather can't come from an ordinary peacock. So the feather comes from a mada matta mayura adya. Comes from the foremost of peacocks who are filled with passion. So even the very peacock, look at this. If the peacock is described, the peacock from which the feather is chosen is described, you can imagine the nature of the description that's about to follow, which, with your permission, we will skip over. But it's incredibly detailed, limb by limb, goes on, looks like for about 24 verses, and we will skip ahead with your permission. So we come to verse 189. Verse 189. So this, the description of Sri Krishna has concluded. Srimatya Radhika Devya Vama Bhage Sa Sambhramam. Actually, this is just concluding the description of what Arjuna is seeing. And what she sees is Vama Bhage on Sri Krishna's left side. Well, who stands to the left of Sri Krishna? Radha. Srimatya Radhika Devya. He is accompanied by Sri Radha standing on his left side. And aradhyantya tambulam arpayantya ashuchi smitam. So Radha, who is described here as shuchi smitam, she has a sweet smile on her face. And what is she doing? Aradhayanti. She is worshipping Sri Krishna. How? By giving him tambulam, pan, and in this way, arpayanti, she is offering pan unto. And, you know, I guess not being raised in India, it takes me a little while to understand certain cultural conventions. And one of which, it's an aside. We'll leave it aside, otherwise we won't finish our text. All right. Samalokyarjuniyasau Madana Vesha Vihwala Samalokya. Having seen all of this, so two dozen verses have just gone by, and Arjuniya, she's called here, having seen all of this, Asau Madana Avesha Vihwala, she is filled and overcome with her love for Sri Krishna, and here it's building up to the peak. So first she gets darshan of Sri Krishna, she sees all around, and then she's focused on Sri Krishna. That's not quite the peak yet. Tatastam chatatagnyatva krishikeshopi sarvavita tasya pani grahitvaiva sarva kridavanantare tataha. Then tamcha, to her, to Arjuni, tata agnyatva, as instructed, as commanded by Hrishikeshaha, by Sri Krishna, who is api sarvavit, the all-knowing Sri Krishna, tasyaha panim grahitva. Sri Krishna, having taken her hands, eva, thus, sarva krida vanantare, leads her into the forest of sarva krida, of all forms of play. And yatha kamam rahore me mahayogeshwaro vibhu. And what does Sri Krishna do? Yatha kamam, according to his desire, rahaha, in that secret place, rema, one word, rema, the root is rum, to enjoy. Sri Krishna enjoys Arjuna, and it is what it says. What's interesting about, there's several interesting things here. First of all, it's hardly a pornographic description. One word. Sri Krishna enjoys Arjuna. So it's not a lurid portrayal at all. The poet handles it with such delicacy. I guess if you enjoy Sanskrit sufficiently, you'd appreciate that this is an incredibly delicate treatment of something which could be handled very clumsily. So in one word, he says, Sri Krishna enjoys her, yatha kamam, according to his desire. And another interesting thing here is how Sri Krishna is described here, yogeshwara vibhu, the all-pervasive Lord of the universe. The all-pervasive Lord of the universe is enjoying Arjuna. Now, I guess we have to discuss at least briefly the very obvious sexual symbolism here, and it's in the text, and it's presented in a really a lovely, delicate way. In human experience, the sexual experience is considered by many to be the peak sensual kind of experience. We have bodies, our bodies are capable of experience, and of the experiences our bodies are capable of, that sexual experience has a potential of yielding the most intense and wonderful and enjoyable experiences. Notice there's nothing, you know, if that were bad or negative, it wouldn't be here in this text, so this is an observation. India over the last several hundred years has been quite prudish. In ancient times, India, ancient culture was not so sex negative. In modern times, it's been described by some that it was actually the British occupation of India that brought in these Victorian kinds of attitudes that made modern Indian culture kind of thinking that anything sexually oriented is dirty or immoral or illicit or should just be avoided. Of course, we understand that sex is a normal part of life. If it weren't for sex, none of us would be here. So it's not anything wrong. And most of you know that there are many temples in India in which sexual activities are portrayed artistically in those temples. So we can't call it immoral or adharmic or dirty. But nor should that be extolled in a pornographic way, because that's going the other extreme. Here, the symbolism is taking a human experience, taking a most powerful human experience, and using that as a way to understand experience of Bhagavan. So here's what the text suggests. Imagine the best possible sexual experience, whatever your imagination of what that might be. Now, think of Arjuna, who is having this experience. First of all, Arjuna is endowed with a very attractive, young, healthy female body. And her lover is described as Yogeshwara, Vibhu, the all-pervasive Lord of the cosmos. So if the peak of human sexual experience with a human partner could be so wonderful, here it's with the Lord of the cosmos. So the intent of this presentation is to say, whatever you imagine as the peak sexual experience, multiply that by several million. Because who is the lover in this case? Yogeshwara Hari Vibhu. So this is the very the text doesn't portray anything in a negative or pornographic way. It says it in a very delicate way, but it shows the legitimacy of using this comparison. So whatever is the peak human sexual experience is a shadow of what is possible in a meditative experience of Sri Krishna. That's the intent of that text. And all of that is conveyed in just a handful of words. Yatha kama, according to his desire, raha, in that secret place, in that kriravanam, in the prior verse, and the one word, reme, he enjoyed. Who enjoyed? Mahayogeshwaraha, who, the all-pervasive great lord of yoga.
The Reme comes from Ram.
Comes from Ram, right. I think it's an aorist verb, I think, these old-fashioned past tense verbs.
It's a
Ram is a root.
And Ram,
right.
Is a divine.
Pardon me?
It's play, but divine play.
Ram simply means to revel or to enjoy, right? So, and the name Rama is derived from that same root. Ramate iti Rama. Ram, you know, think of some common name. Ramya, you know, one is a one more familiar form of that word. Ramana, are words derived from that root. So here, Reme, he enjoyed. And really speaking, that line is the, pardon the use of the word, it's the climax of this chapter. And I had to choose that word because there's definitely a climax is indicated in that expression. But how delicately it's expressed. Simply, he enjoyed. But before we move on, just capture that vision that what this text is portraying is that the experience of Sri Krishna in meditation. Remember, this is all about meditation, right? The experience of Sri Krishna in meditation is vastly more intense than the peak human sexual experience, and that's what's described here. All right. So now we see, now the chapter comes to an end very quickly. Tatastasya skandadeshe pradatta bhujapallavaha. So Arjuna, after all of the play, is the word that they use, lovemaking is what we would say in more modern times. After all of that, she's exhausted. And tataha, thereafter, tasyaha pradatta bhuja pallavaha, her tender arms are skanda deshe, wrapped around Sri Krishna's neck as he leads her out of that forest. And agatya sharadham praha paschamesmin sarovare shigram snapayatan vangim krida shrantham ridusmitam. Sri Krishna agatya, having brought Arjuna out from the forest, and she's kind of almost carrying her out of the forest. Then praha sharadam, he addresses a servant, a gopi named Sharada, and tells the servant, paschame asmin sarovare, to the western lake, take her to the western lake, and shigram snapaya, bathe her quickly. Tanu angi, this delicate one, Arjuna, who is krida shrantam, who's worn out from too much play. That's literally what it means. She's tired from all that play. So take her to the lake and have her bathe there. And we'll skip ahead now to 194. 194, the second half. Jalabhyantaram aptasau punar harjuna tan gataha. Transformations are handled in very subtle ways. Here's another transformation. Jala abhyantaram apta. She who is apta, actually, you can't translate it literally very well. She who is in the water. Jala abhyantaram apta. She who is in the water. And the next pronoun comes, asau. He. She who is in the water, asau he, punaha again, Arjuna tam gataha, regains Arjuna ta, Arjuna ness. She, having gone into the water, regains her nature as Arjuna. And it's just curious to see the gendered pronouns flipping from masculine to feminine, and now from feminine back to masculine. In the second half of 165. Drishtva tam arjunam krishno vishanham bhagnamanasam. This is interesting. How do you think Arjuna feels at this point? Krishna drishtva. Krishna sees Arjuna now. What does he see? So Arjuna has had this most amazing experience. He's gone through what appears to be years of tapas and sadhana to achieve this. And after all of that sadhana, pardon the word, the climax is achieved. in the forest of pleasure, so to speak, and that comes and goes fairly quickly, as it does in the human sex act as well. So, and then shortly thereafter, Arjuna bathes, and Arjuna is no more. He's back as Arjuna. So, having gone to the absolute peak of divine experience, Arjuna finds himself now not only removed from the experience is over, but now he's back in his former body. How does Arjuna feel? Vishannam. He's depressed. That's... Where is this? Yeah. Vishannam. He's depressed. Bhagna manasam. His mind is broken. He's absolutely, you know, sad. He's just had the most exquisite experience of his life, and in a moment it's gone. Years of sadhana leading up to it, and in moments it's gone. It's gone. So what does Sri Krishna do? Mayaiha paniha sprishtva prakritam viradhe punaha. So Sri Krishna panina with his hand, mayaya with his power of maya in his hand, Arjuna sprishtva, having touched, maybe like this, having touched Arjuna, prakritam viradhe. He restored Arjuna to his prior good health and feeling. So he helped out, and just with that touch and blessing of his hand, he helped Arjuna come out of that depression and sadness and loss and be restored to his prior mental condition, as well as already his prior physical condition. I'll comment on that in just a minute. Let's just finish the text. We're just going to see one or two more verses. Shri Krishna Vacha Dhananjayatvam Hashanse Bhavan Priyasako Mama. O Arjuna, Dhananjaya, O Arjuna, Tvam Hashanse, you are blessed. Bhavan, you are blessed. Priyasakaha Mama, you are my dearest friend. Tvatsamo nasti me kopi raho vetha jagatraye. In this, in all the three worlds, tvat samaha nasti me, there's no one kopi, no one has been blessed like you, Arjuna. In all the three worlds, no one has been so blessed as you are. Yadrahasyam tvaya prishtam anubhutam chatat punaha katyate yadi tat kasmai shapase mam tad Arjuna. And we'll end with those two lines. So Sri Krishna says, Yatrahasyam, this secret, Tvaya Prishtam, which was requested by you at the very beginning of this chapter. So this secret, this experience, which was requested by you long ago, Anubhutam cha, and what you have experienced, Arjuna, this is why you're so blessed. And the closing statement here, Katyate yadi tat kasmai, if you were to tell this to anyone else, kasmai, to anyone, if you're to tell that to anyone, then shapase mam, you would be cursing me. Tada, Arjuna. If you share this secret with anyone else, that would be a tremendous insult to me. Well, that's because matters of love are meant to be kept private, just as between people. It's not something you share casually. In fact, to share such intimate experiences demeans those experiences, belittles those experiences, because the experience is so much beyond words. So it ends by Sri Krishna saying, to tell what you've experienced to anyone else, this would be shameful, this would be hurtful to me. So a comment though on Arjuna's depression, because something that can happen in meditation. This whole text, this whole chapter, actually the whole text so far, is a text of transformation. That transformation happening in stages, and it's a text on meditation. So in meditation, how to put this? Arjuna went through many, many, many steps. In our lives of transformation, we also go through many, many, many steps. And perhaps we could say that each meditation you take, each meditation you practice, is one step. This morning, if you meditated, that was one step. Tomorrow morning, if you meditate, one more step. Every time you meditate, one more step. Now, it's a long journey. And we find sometimes, if you can imagine being like up in the Himalayas, or I just love to hike up there, because sometimes you take a few steps and you come to the top of a ridge and you see in front of you these snow-capped peaks and the most glorious view. So sometimes a few steps will take you up to a peak. Sometimes a few steps will take you into a muddy stream that you have to cross, wading across it up to your waist because there's no bridge and there's no other way to cross. Sometimes you're going through a dark jungle. Sometimes you're going through a sunny meadow. Every step we take is different. Some of the steps result in exquisite vistas. Some of the steps take us in the wrong direction. You might be taking several steps, and you get to that dead end sign. You won't find dead end signs in the Himalayas, but you get the idea. This happens to us in meditation. If you can envision every meditation as one step in your spiritual journey, reflect on the fact that some of those steps can lead us up to these grand vistas. But then once you reach that vista, once you're crossing that ridge, what happens? Naturally. What happens in meditation is sometimes if you have an extraordinarily nice meditation, then the next morning you don't get it. How do you feel? How did Arjuna feel? Like that. But that's how it goes. That's how the journey goes. So in order to get to the goal, you have to go up. In order to get to the goal, you also have to go down. And going down is just as much part of the journey as going up. And sometimes we make wrong turns. Did you ever have a meditation where you did nothing but wonder why your mind won't be quiet? Why is your mind running all over the place? Well, you're not making any progress on your journey with a meditation like that. Sometimes on a journey we make wrong turns, or we just stay in the same place for several days without moving on. Meditations can be like that. So it's a nice vision to think about it. Arjuna's incredible journey of transformation, and to think of that as a model for our own lifelong journeys of meditation. Every time you sit to meditate, one more step. And every step is something different, something new. The important thing is we keep making the steps. Sometimes they're taking us up, sometimes they're taking us down. At least we're taking the steps. Without step by step by step, there's no hope of reaching the conclusion of this journey of transformation. So this was Arjuna's experience. And let's save a few moments here at the end of the class for a brief meditation.
Very nice.